Hello, everyone. Welcome to this session or episode or broadcast of the Celestine Community Radio Show. It's a delight to feel y'all tuning in and really know that, you know, there are people tuned in all over the world, all across so many different cultures, so many different religious backgrounds. It's people who want to and seek a connection with the one God of love, this divine energy that dwells within. It's really an intelligence. And what we have in common is the desire to connect in terms of real experience. And so in that sense, we don't talk much about creeds and beliefs and abstract things. We really are focused on the experience of spirituality. Because guess what? That experience is the same across all religions. So when you really boil it down to what does the connection with this higher intelligence within us, this loving, divine, guiding power within us that can live within us, then, you know, it feels all the same no matter where a person lives, no matter their language or their, as I say, religious beliefs. It's the basic connection. So that's what we talk about in the Celestine Prophecy Series. That's where I believe all of us are in the spiritual evolution of planet Earth. I believe all the information is in now for how to have this full connection spiritually. It's our birthright. It's what our brains are designed to tune into, and we're figuring it out. I think for the first time in history, where we're not encumbered by doctrine and culture. Or even language, we can all know this experientially. So that's what's so exciting, I believe, in terms of what's going on in the world today and the breakthrough that is occurring. Now, the good thing about this is that it's self-proving. In other words, each person can find their own evidence that a deeper spiritual connection is real and that it pays off. And I like to say even more than that, it's the way to have the good life. And when I say good life, I don't mean there won't be challenges, there won't be hurts in this world still. There are. But what gets us through those, you know, what keeps us elevated, what keeps us out of a debilitating depression about what's happening around us is that, you know, we can tune in to a peace that surpasses all understanding. And that is a real euphoria. You know, the mystics across every religion talk about the bliss of divine connection that we can make. That's there. That's real. And, you know, it's all just a matter of tuning in and making the attitude changes that are necessary to open that door wider. And to really get the juice. But I can tell you, all over the world, people are finding an experience of connection for themselves. And then through practice, using intention and prayer visualization, what happens is that just blossoms from that first moment of tuning in. It blossoms. And it's self motivating. It allows us to be still fully empowered in ourselves. There's no cult aspect whatsoever to this, because these are not even my ideas. These are ideas that I believe we're all coming to at the same time as we mature into more of a global mind that speaks the same languages, is open to the same basic concepts that can be validated in conversations with each other. So it's all self-directed, but it is looking for the real thing, looking for this real experience. And let me just, you know, say again, you know, what these experiences are real quickly, because I think remembering them, keeping them in the forefront is what's so important. One is that peace that I talked about, that sense of being centered and okay and connected with a fuller part of our consciousness that realizes that there is no death. There is miracles and a miracle world, I should say. There's a miracle world that we can step into, and these miracles are again something that we can prove to ourselves. So we have that peace, and we have what I call tiny miracles of synchronicity. Now these are things that events really that we perceive ourselves through life, and it's the payoff that is so important about these mysterious coincidences we call synchronicities, because they are there to open something up, open up a whole course of a direction in our lives, to solve an immediate basic problem, whatever that is. Yeah, they come in to provide little miracles. And the good thing about that is that these synchronicities always get larger for us once we tune in. And the synchronicities are first there to give us a taste of the good life, of the spiritual good life. You know, it's exciting when something mysterious coincidence happens that opens our lives at a new level, and we go, wow, that's exciting. You mean life can really be this adventurous and this almost euphoric? Can we really have that kind of life? They are there to show us that. And then what they do is they clarify what holds us back. And remember, it is another activity, another mental focus in our lives that holds us back. Some people call it, addictions, self-delusion, or I just call it distractions, because it's hard to be here on a planet with all this trouble seemingly around us and not know why we're here, you know, not know what we're really supposed to do. So the ego, wanting to keep us safe and calm, leads us into some activity that we overindulge in. And it could be anything from shopping to sports to working too hard to any addiction that you can imagine. And what it is it's just a focus that pushes everything out of our lives except an obsession to do this activity. And by doing that, we narrow life, we reduce it to, just a material meaning, and we won't let anything else in. That's what's, atheists that are devout, don't give me any evidence, don't tell me, I'm not going to consider anything else. That's the psychological mechanism. They can't think anything else. They can't find a spiritual meaning in this world, because they do not want to. They can't open up enough, because they are focused on this ideology of atheism. So we all have that. That's the thing. We can't do judgments here, because you can't live in this world without having some activity that distracts us from the real quest, and that is opening up to our spiritual connection, what our brains are really wired to. The ego has to cease control a little bit, feels a little bit out of the ordinary to open up past. But what we find is that, this distraction, whatever it is nothing compared to the peace and understanding and the synchronicities that come. But there's more. There's so much more. One is intuitive guidance comes in, and again we'll focus on giving and relationship in this episode, because we really want to get deeper and deeper into the how to, right? Because that's the deeper experience that we're looking at. But the basics is we get guiding intuitions along the way. We tune into those. We realize, and the ego has to, again, step back because the ego is talking in our heads unceasingly. The ego has to step back, and we begin to feel ideas coming in, thoughts coming in that come from beyond us, that elevate us a little bit in inspiration. Those are intuitions, and once we follow those, we get to a place, we act on them in a way that puts us in a place for another tiny miracle of synchronicity to move our lives forward, to make life go easier. And then beyond that, of course, there's a sense of purpose. The synchronicities, what holds us back is identified. We've become aware of that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I spend too much money. I bet on too much football. Whatever it is. What happens is that we go on, we realize that the synchronicities have a pattern, and it has to do with giving, and that it goes, there's a talent, a way of giving that each of us has. It doesn't have to be how we make money, but it's a talent that we're here on this earth to actualize, and that it becomes a way of a truth that we're telling that it seems everybody who crosses our path really needs to hear. Now, that is mission. That's a purpose that we come in, and that's elevating blissfully beyond any kind of material life that we can engage in. Suddenly, we're living out our spiritual purpose, and it's on and on. And once we get to that place, then we're the tiny miracles increase, and we can become who we envisioned before we came. We could become that person. So that's why we connect, and that's why we're looking now for the real experience. And it's amazing that, if you look at every poll about spirituality, you see that it's, number one, becoming more open, more experiential, less tied to ideology. If you look at just people in general, you see that while there's a lot of conflict still out there among the people who know something's missing, their ordinary distractions don't work anymore. They get more and more hyper-focused, and for what you see on the television and on the news, they're getting more violent. But compared to the movement towards spirituality in the world, it is minuscule. So, I like to bring an optimism because I think optimism is justified. Maybe not if all you think is real is what you see on the news, but there's much more happening here, and I think we can be optimistic. The world is not going crazy and going into the end times. It's the beginning times right now. And I believe that, we can prove that to ourselves because we can step into this miracle universe. Now, let's remember how we do that. What's the first step? I want to tune into all this. What's the first step that I take? One is intention, a prayerful intention for this to come into your life. And number two is to become a giver, not a taker. Now, there is a kind of polarization of takers in the world. But there's also another end of renewed and larger giving in this world. And that means consciously giving to other people. Now, how do we do that? Well, we give them everything. We give them everything that we have. We give them smiles. We give them energy. We are always acting in the other person's best interest, whoever we're in relationship with. Throughout our day, strangers, ongoing relationships. And that's why, on the show here, we're beginning with relationships, because until we can really actualize our spiritual consciousness, that we can maybe get into pretty easily by ourselves. Until we can manifest that in the world and stay in it while we're dealing with people in the world, we get knocked out of it. So one thing that you can absolutely prove to yourself is if you focus not on what you can get in any way, or even just not focus on just getting through the interactions of your day and not having to care, not having to do anything but get through them. In that state, there's a kind of cutting off of much of the juice of spirituality, and I would argue your own, your ability to hold this consciousness when you're alone or with trusted others, you know. Once we get in, if we can just be a giver in terms of wanting the best for the person that we're interacting with, and this is attitude change, but wanting the best for the person that we're interacting with, and always never doing anything or saying anything that's not in your honest feeling of what's best for that other person. So you become, instead of a taker, you become a giver, and you focus that. And the thing is, when you give, you get. And it comes back to us. Everybody knows that what goes around comes around. And if you're given love and energy and care in terms of how you treat other people and sensitivity to what you feel intuitively is their best interest, if you stay in alignment with that, then everything multiplies back to you that's positive. If you just look at karmic design, that again, that's provable to oneself. I'm not making this up. I've just observed it so much. It's certainly a truism for me. It's part of the 12th insight, in my view. It's into the world. We know this. If we seek to give and to be a synchronicity some way for another person, what happens is that we are asking ourselves, how do I do that? How do I know what's best, or what I can, of my knowledge and my energy, what I can do for this other person to be a synchronicity? When you ask yourself that, what are you doing? It's a prayer. You know, give me, go into any kind of interaction, give me the knowledge to know how I can be a giver to this person, be a synchronicity to this person. And what happens is, it comes to you as an intuition. And that alone opens our consciousness. Anybody who wants to do it, it's our consciousness up. So you become more intuitive. Generally, you're hooked into your highest intelligence. Feels like an elevation. Wow, I'm smarter than I thought I was. I've got this channel of intelligence helping me through life. And when we do that, it activates a karmic design, I believe, where, karmic design is to bring back to you what you are in the way you act. So you bring in more people who arrive on time to be a synchronicity for you. Now, what if we don't do that? Then we have the ordinary world out there where we have bad luck. A lot of the times people seem to come out in our lives to take from us in some way. And if we start to analyze that, I believe we can prove to ourselves, each of us, that it's because of our behavior. We're taking in some way ourselves. So if you want to increase the number of good, positive synchronicities coming in, just become a giver. And you attract into your lives more givers and more synchronicity and more unfolding of this kind of miracle life that I'm describing. I always like to comment, and I may even have done it last week, but there are a lot of religions out there that think that once you go spiritual, bad things happen. There's some sort of evil activation that wants to knock you out of your spirituality. Well, it's just the opposite is true. You don't get an evil activation of some force that's trying to hurt you. You get an influx of the good force, the karmic positivity that is our birthright in this world. That's what occurs. Now, does ego, you know, does ego resist sometimes us changing the way we have an attitude, I mean, the way we, our outlook toward others in this process? Yeah, you know, and you start to, you know, your distraction, you start to go, you know, under stress of some kind, you know, instead of going deeper into spirituality, you might revert back to your distraction, whatever that is. And when that happens, of course, things go wrong. And it might appear that this is a hard journey to make this turn in life. But I don't think it's hard at all. It's clear and simple. The only difficult part is to wake up in the morning and reoriented to a spiritual outlook toward life, instead of a material, instead of just getting along or getting through it, or the ego's goals of being safe by hook or crook. You know, it's just that shift in attitude. So, you know, looking at the specifics of attitude change into this is what the show is all about. And again, I really thank you for joining in. One last comment on the big picture, and that is, remember that there's a lot of conflict out there. The only way to deal with that positively, and the only way to save the world from itself or its own negativity as we go through into the future, is to hold a spiritual consciousness, because it's contagious. You know, there's just one mind. Our egos separate out into to other minds. I want to mention again, I'll probably do it for a month, the new book by Larry Dossey, One Mind. And that is just evidence that we really do, when we connect with each other at any level, we share minds. And so we have to understand the problems of interaction from who's going to control the shared mind. That we, especially in romantic or long-term relationships, you know, there's we have to take the larger picture. So that's the larger attitude, knowing that it's what's really effective in changing our lives and the lives of others. So we're contagious. So if we hold this, we can think of ourselves as on the leading edge of human evolution, because ultimately, you know, as more and more of us get into this holding this consciousness and become givers, not takers, all the problems in the world will be solved. I mean, sure, do we have to take some people and put them somewhere where they can't do damage until they wake up? Sure. I mean, there's some hard choices to be made, but if we center it in spirituality, then we know that a positive evolution can move in the world. And by choosing the best life we could possibly have, we choose the only way to go about resolving all the conflict and the problems in this world. So that's what's at stake, and that's what's so much fun, because we're moving into the spiritual good life step by step. And that in itself reduces the amount of conflict and fear and negative emotion out there in the world. It replaces it. Everybody's brain wants to jump into this grounded spiritual integrity. We're designed to do that. But we have to make the choice to go into it. And it's a lot easier if we're surrounded with people who are already there, because it's contagious to them and they can be lifted up into it. So that's the big picture. I want to get into some specific relationship issues. Again, you know, it's all about to hold this spirituality in our relationships, we have to be taking the giving higher ground. And so if that can be our image as we talk about that, you know, no matter how weak you think you are or incapable or any of that old ego stuff, you can be more than you ever thought by taking the higher road and the higher path. So, you know, we talked last week about control dramas. And, you know, it's one of the things that hold humans back. Because, remember, we're when we merge minds with each other, and all two people focusing on each other merge minds, but then there's, and that's a boost. That's why it's, you know, new love feels so good, because you, all of a sudden, you feel like more than you were around this person. To an extent, every human interaction has that quality. But when, you know, what happens is that the ego still wants to control this larger mind as if it was ourselves, as if this larger mind didn't belong to the joint you know, the two people involved. It feels so good to be able to take that and then let the other person come along and follow us as we lead this higher conscious entity, the two joined, in the direction that we want. But what does the other feel? Yeah, when that happens, one person feels elevated, the other person feels diminished, and fights back. And the way people fight back over the energy that they both share is through at the negative level is, and, you know, can be talked about as control dramas. We talked about that. The poor me, you know, uses a guilt trip to win control of the relationship. The aloof wants to be distant and hard to get any straight answers from, and to mystify the other person and get them to be putting attention back on the aloof, and that is the way they get the energy of the relationship. And of course, the interrogator finds fault, and glory, and, you know, glories in that fault, because when we start to everyone wants to avoid criticism to some degree, so they defer to the interrogator, and the interrogator can control the relationship in that manner. And of course, intimidator is the most aggressive and violent way to scare somebody into ceasing to want to jointly control this energy. You know, they can, because we're so focused on them to make sure we're safe, they get the energy of the relationship. It's as simple as that, and as difficult to deal with as that. And what we talked about last week was being able to stop the control battle, because with two people each using a control drama, you know, they're doing battle with each other in those situations. And that first blush of love, you know, always degenerates into, at the ego level, always degenerates into a power struggle around some form of these control dramas. So that's pretty clear. I don't think there's anybody out there listening that doesn't understand that dynamic. Now, what to do about it? We talked about naming the game. Okay, and all you have to do is be honest. Don't play a game back. Just say, you know, when I'm with you, I feel as though I'm being criticized, or I can never really know you. I feel like you're aloof, and I can't know you. Or I feel guilt tripped, or I feel scared around you. And you know, you the dealing with an intimidator, of course, everybody needs to seek counseling and have a plan, a strategy, because if someone is threatening violence, then sometimes all you can do is get away from them and figure out how to go forward with help, professional help. But these other little ones that happen in the workplace and families and so forth is very understandable. And by just naming the game, now there was a prequest, something to do before naming the game, and that is get centered in your own spiritual givingness. Okay, you want to get centered in holding this place where you're connected, and you want and you really are feeling that sense of I'm not dependent on this other person. What brings me freedom is having a dependency fulfilled by a spiritual quest. So you're not dependent anymore. You're not afraid of the future anymore because you have this energy that guides you, remember, into more and more material security, and ultimately your mission in life and your success in life. So it's get to that place and then name the game. Name the game. Because if you give them love and attention while you're naming the game, that's what they want anyway. So sometimes people will, faster than you think, it'll be contagious to them to go authentic themselves. Because when you're honest and authentic, then the other person tends to go into honesty and authenticity. Now, sometimes people don't, of course, you know that. They argue, they get even more stuck in that control drama and denial and all that kind of thing. Don't say another word. That's what we talked about last week. Don't say another word. Just say, well, that's how I feel. And when enough people tell that person that, they'll start to get it. People are ultimately, I believe, self-correcting. You know, they think about a truth that is given to them. It's a synchronicity to them. It doesn't feel that good for them. But if you name the game, you're giving them something. And that's important to know about thinking in the other person's best interest. You know, you have to be authentic and truthful in your effort to be a giver and to think in the other person's best interest. You know, we really have to be able to tell the hard truths, especially with children and bosses. It's more difficult, but it is what keeps you in your spirituality and ultimately will lead to a blossoming of your inner self and your higher intelligence and everything else. So that's the mechanism. Now, let's you know, a lot of people wrote in, well, how does this work in my case, and offered some cases to be discussed. And I think one that is very apt, and it's funny because it's larger families, extended family interactions, and that's particularly up for Sally now right now, especially because we have one of the family members who's approaching death, and he's being great about it and open and authentic in a way that is shifting the family dynamic. You know, when everybody's good and everybody's doing well, and you know, you just revert to the ego's kind of view of the world as ordinary and a constant, and you know, egos can go pretty high with assuming that we don't need any kind of higher intelligence connection. We look at how good we're doing without it. Well, something always happens eventually to knock the ego's boat, and I think that in the dynamic that I'm talking about in our larger family, you know, it is funny how when one person goes authentic and really wants to talk about what's really happening here in the now without any controlling of any kind, it's contagious. And I'm not saying that control dramas are you know, bad otherwise, but it gets us to the place that I want to describe, and that's that authentic interaction place. So eventually the egos get jolted by the realities of the world. We do We come here not knowing why. We have to figure out why and what we're going to do while we're here to survive and prosper and what our dreams are and all those kinds of things. And then we, at some point, make a transition into the world to come, into the afterlife. The more that can be a natural thing, an expected thing, the more it is our, death is an advisor, some mystics say. You have to realize that life here is important. What we do here is important because we don't live forever. This is our contribution. We came with one in our hearts. And I think that, it's what's important is being able to go to authenticity. Now, let's say you're in a situation like that and or something similar where, the family has to sort of get together and, it's you're wondering how to handle that. If there's a control drama that's obvious, somebody has to bring it up. Somebody is controlling the energy of the whole group in a selfish way, and you have to say it. You have to say, well, can we, say what's happening. If it's a control drama, say, I'm feeling criticized in this, or, and if the family will stay together, then what happens is that people will go authentic. Somebody has to begin it. Somebody has to do it. But if the knowledge can be in any of these situations, and we get a letter from a woman who one of her children was acting as a kind of poor me, and the other children were talking among themselves, outside of dealing with her, I believe, about it. And the same solution always exists. You have to get them in a conversation, a family conversation, where everybody says how they feel in the family and how they perceive the power balances, how they perceive how they're being treated by the other people. And out of that will come an authenticity. Now, I can just hear a lot of you listening out there and saying, well, I couldn't do that with my family. They're too far gone, or they never admit anything, or any of those kinds of kinds of feelings. I would just say, if you make alliances with people who in the family who would agree that if they could just put it all on the table, maybe the family interaction could go authentic, then you call a meeting and you just present that. Now, it's always going to be defensive if they're targeted, but if it's just, how can we make the family interact in a better way, And I would just tell you that all kinds of dynamics occur here. So sometimes the person who's most concerned with the family doing something is also the most controlling in the family. So remember, sometimes we discover in these kind of meetings that it's us as an individual that's becoming more, is doing the controlling in a way we never imagined. So again, it's the group. It's the group that is going to have an insight. And sometimes we'll have to look hard at ourselves that way. But if you really want to hold your spirituality, you have to take the risk of going to where there's problems in your relationships and try to put it on the table. If there's a game you think's going on, name the game. But also be aware that, there may be something going on with you. So this clearing has to happen to every people, even the people that think they're naming the game. Sometimes, you know, you will be confronted with another kind of game you might be playing. And honesty is the great resolver of tension in these cases. You know, everybody has to consider what everybody else is saying about them. Now, I don't like encounter groups. This is, you know, where you just tell the horrible things other people do. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about seeking authenticity. And if everybody's saying, well, maybe I do that, and I don't know, I'll have to think about it, that's an honest reaction. If everybody has that honest reaction of just hearing it, I hear what you're saying, I'll think about what you're saying. So that alone moves the family group or any kind of group into authenticity. And that's where you want. And that feels better to everyone. And, you know, some hard cases you should go get a counselor that would come in and help. But it's what all of us are learning to do. Relationships can get better. The power struggle can cease if we just, again, become a giver, give them energy. Don't threaten to leave while you're naming the game. That won't work. You have got to be giving energy into this situation. And again, that pays off. People respond to authentic, loving words, even if they're challenging. So that's, you know, we'll be talking the rest of this month about other situations in which power struggles manifest in groups and that you may be running into. We'll try to give as many examples. People, I'd love for you if you write in and give us, there's a on the radio show page, there is a place to send in a question or a comment. Wish you'd tell some stories about interactions that were resolved or interactions that you are having difficulty with. We'll try to get some of those covered. They usually come in groups, and it'll let me know what's up for a lot of people out there listening. So with that, I want to move on. I want to talk a little bit about some other areas of life that we have to seek to live our spirituality in. I really want to especially look at physical health and wellness. It's such a big part of this. Illness knocks us out of our greatest energy connection. And does it knock it out at the core level? But in terms of the way we can manifest it into our dreams coming true and all that is somewhat determined by how we handle our physical well-being, our lifestyle is constructed, the things that we do out there. Taking life for granted or taking our health for granted or just those things, because this is a world of physical poison, I can tell you. And it covers all aspects of life. It covers poisons in the air we breathe, poisons in the food we eat, poisons in the medical care that is standard care to give. And generally, if I can just talk a little bit about that, just to, again, the big picture first, and this is not a depressing picture. It's reality, but it's a reality that's getting better. I always like to say that current polls say 60% of the people, for instance, are now considering living in a healthier way and partaking of an integrative approach to medical problems, not just a ordinary take this drug and call me in the morning approach, but an integrative, which includes food and prevention and all the rest, to medical problems or potential medical problems. So it is something that's getting better as we speak, but it's something that you do need to know about because, you know, people resist. One of our greatest distractions is the food we eat. And I think I talked last time about glutamates. These are food taste enhancers that cover up really bad processed food that we buy to eat. And if without these taste enhancers that affect our brains, then, you know, we wouldn't get near that food. And, you know, so processed food of any kind is suspect. And this is not me, not a medical doctor. I've done research, but I'm really quoting Dr. Blaylock, and you can Google him if you want. But he's an integrative neurologist. So he sees a lot of the things that happen with coming from flu shots and coming from the glutamates. And the glutamates, again, it's if you think monosodium glutamate, MSG, you know what I'm getting at. That's a particular kind of glutamate, and these glutamates can be made out of any protein. So you'll see pea protein and soy, this or that in your food, and you know, according to Dr. Blaylock, many of those things are glutamates, taste enhancers. Now, remember, glutamates do not have a taste of their own. They just fool your brain. They go to our glutamate receptors in the brain and make you think the thing you're eating is the most scrumptious, most awesome thing you've ever put in your mouth. So if you're eating for taste and you're roaming around trying to find the restaurant with that yummy kind of euphoric almost taste, oh, this is so good. Even if you're full, you go, I guess got to have something else that tastes like that. And so obviously much of this is the cause for the obesity epidemic. But according to Dr. Blaylock, if your lifestyle includes multi-meals a day where you're getting these chemicals in your brain, the incidence of Alzheimer's it goes up dramatically. And you can do the research on your own out there. Don't take my word for it. Again, I'm quoting integrative doctors that I trust. But those are the poisons that I'm talking about with glutamates. So there are other chemicals too, and sweeteners are, according to Dr. Blaylock and also Dr. Mercola, M-E-R-C-O-L-A, is internet advising doctor. There's a hierarchy of the damage, and one is the glutamates are bad. The sugar is probably the worst. Sugar produces a process called glycation. So what it does is the sugar, as it metabolizes, creates these molecules that attach to the outside of our cells and degrade the membranes. That's called a glycation. It gives you a premature puffiness of the face, you know, where you kind of look a little swollen and the pores stand out. You know, that's not normal aging. That's sugar consumption. And it doesn't take much to do great damage to your body. So sweeteners especially, I mean, probably the worst is the artificial sweeteners that exist in diet products. According to Dr. Blaylock, and I sent out a article about that to everyone. It is so dramatically harmful. And many of those chemicals are prohibited in other countries, but there's a big lobbying force out there to keep them alive in the U.S. But do your own research. Diet soft drinks are debilitating in the long run. And for many, many ways that you can research for yourselves, but just I want to mention it because it just makes us, it downgrades our consciousness to a point where it's hard to connect spiritually to get this euphoric life that I'm talking about. If we're sick and tired and looking for the next glutamate high, you know, it's a distraction that knocks us out of our spirituality. We can get it, you know, but then our lifestyle itself degrades us. Are there, how many people are affected by that in the Western countries? Millions. Millions. It's just a natural suppression of what I think our ultimate consciousness is, an energy level is. So if you're old, it leads to debilitating diseases that, you know, sometimes doctors warn you about, but it doesn't sink in. Integrative doctors give you the case. You can find your own. They're in every city. They talk prevention to you. And I just want to tell you there's a spiritual reason to do it, not just physical health or energy level. If you're young and think you can just get away with eating all that, well, maybe you can for a long, long time. But what happens is your energy's suppressed, and this connection that I'm talking about is suppressed. So, you know, being honest, you know, I'm not going to give you a rose-colored picture and not tell you where the barriers are to this kind of life. I'm just going to tell you that this kind of life is worth pursuing, and that means with changes in our lifestyles and the way we keep our bodies healthy. So again, that's a tidbit on health and wellness. I really want to talk a little bit also about finances. Don't have a whole lot of time here. But I do want to do that, and we'll get, you know, next month we'll talk a lot about our financial life and how that's the spiritual synchronicity can manifest in it, and the ways that we can enhance that and so forth. But for now, I just want to talk about the giving principle in our finances. And you know, I mentioned this I think last week. There are two things. One is giving in terms of money. You know, money is just an energy, right? It's an energy that comes in or and an energy that goes out. We definitely want. And by the way, that money is all evil is not a spiritual concept that's beneficial. You know. Money is not evil. Money is just an energy, and you can use it in an evil manner, or you can use it in a spiritual manner. And the spiritual manner is to be a shift some of your finances to giving. 10% is what I advocate, but that's kind of from all the scriptures around the world. I also say start with as much as you can and work up to that. But there's something, you know, I can't tell you how it's changed my life, giving money. Because, as I said last time, you know, you the more you make yourself, the more you're able to give. And the more you give, the more you make yourself. Now, can you sabotage that so it won't work? Maybe. Probably, I guess. You can give money and then act in a terrible taking way with everybody in your life, and you might can suppress the money part too. But I think in most cases, the people that begin to tithe or want to move into giving at every level of their life. And what happened, what's so good about this is it also opens your intuition up, because you have this money set aside and you say, okay, what good can I do with this? And what happens is that question opens up your intuitive guidance, and you will be shown what to do with it. Something will come up, and you'll get that hit of inspiration. You'll go, that's the one I've been waiting for. You give the money. Individuals, organizations, whatever you think, whatever you're guided to. It's an activator of good. You'll have more economic activity, opportunity. What happens is that when you're given money, people come into your life that through interactions with you allow you to get more money. Now, again, if you're taking a totally giving way in which you make your money to begin with, I mean, if it's doing something that's service of the world, service of the best part of the evolution of the world, could be technology, could be anything. But if you're in that and you're looking out for the best interest totally of another person as you conduct your business, then what happens is that people flock in to get what you're offering. The people that need synchronicity come to you for what you're able to give. You want to see this as it's not pure chance like the old material world seems to think. It is a spiritual dynamic that makes all this happen. So begin with tithing, I would encourage you. And we'll talk more about the dynamics of larger tithes and what it could do to the world if we really had a tithing economy. There's just so much there to talk about, and we'll do that in subsequent months. But I just wanted to, I'm going to talk on whatever the news is. Now, the news here is that more people are tithing every day. And that's a positive thing out there. The surveys show that more people are giving. Not just to charities, though. See, it's not just to charities that are official and you can write off. People are giving to people. People are giving to organizations they can't write off. It's where you're directed is the biggest thing. And as you ask that question, your intuitive consciousness, this intelligence comes in, and that the larger your intuitive intelligence, the greater your life will go. Because and this is the last point. Part of your intuition are premonitions. Now, premonitions are intuitions that tell you where not to go, tell you who not to interact with, tell you, stop you from going in a way that might turn negative for you. Now, I always like to say that in this spiritual good life, this miracle universe, we develop a kind of powerful premonition. Now, so you're not just led to the good parts. If you make a mistake, if you're going in some direction that's wrong, you get that intuitive hit there. Take another way home. Plan this trip in another time. Wait on a decision you're making about a business transaction. All these things are amazingly powerful for the good life. So with this, we're going to wrap it up. I really think that I love it that we're all connecting this way. I'd love to talk like this. There's all sorts of information that you need to know and that I need to pull together and help get move out into the airways. So tell other people about the show if you think they're really going to be turned on about it and love this kind of information. Let's grow. Let's get bigger. Let's be contagious to more and more people. So again, thank you, and we'll see you next time.